That's all forgiven and forgotten, Gully. Now listen to me. When you get back to Old St. Pat's, turn around until you're facing the loudest shadows. Got that? Yes. Go toward the noise until you feel a deep pricking on your skin. Then stop. Then stop. Make a half turn into compression and a feeling of falling. Follow that. Follow that. You'll pass through a solid sheet of light and come to the taste of quinine. That's really a mass of wire. Push straight through the quinine until you see something that sounds like trip hammers. You'll be safe. How do you know all this, Robin? I've been briefed by an expert, Gully. There was the sensation of laughter. You'll be falling back into the past any moment now. Peter and Saul are here. They say au revoir and good luck. And Jiz Dagenham, too. Good luck, Gully, dear. The past? This is the future?
Yes, Gully.
Am I here? Is Olivia? And then he was tumbling down, down, down the space-time lines, back into the dreadful pit of now. Chapter 16. His senses uncrossed in the ivory and gold star chamber of Castle Prestane. Sight became sight, and he saw the high mirrors and stained-glass windows, the gold-toothed library with android librarian on library ladder. Sound became sound, and he heard the android secretary tapping the manual bead recorder at the Louis Kahn's desk. Taste became taste as he sipped the cognac that the robot bartender handed him. He knew he was at bay, faced with the decision of his life. He ignored his enemies and examined the perpetual beam carved in the robot face of the bartender, the classic Irish grin. "Thank you," Foyle said.
"My pleasure, sir," the robot replied, and awaited its next cue.
"Nice day," Foyle remarked.
"Always a lovely day somewhere, sir," the robot beamed.
"Awful day," Foyle said.
"Always a lovely day somewhere, sir," the robot responded.
"Day," Foyle said.
"Always a lovely day somewhere, sir," the robot said.
Foyle turned to the others. "That's me," he said, motioning to the robot. "That's all of us. We prattle about free will, but we're nothing but response. Mechanical reaction in prescribed grooves. So, here I am. Here I am, waiting to respond. Press the buttons and I'll jump." He aped the canned voice of the robot.
"My pleasure to serve, sir."
Suddenly his tone lashed them. "What do you want?" They stirred with uneasy purpose. Foyle was burned, beaten, chastened, and yet he was taking control of all of them. "We'll stipulate the threats," Foyle said. "I'm to be hung, drawn, and quartered, tortured in hell if I don't..." "What? What do you want?" "I want my property," Prestane said, smiling coldly. 18 and some odd pounds of pyre, yes. What do you offer?" "I make no offer. I demand what is mine." Yang Yeovil and Dagenham began to speak. Foyle silenced them. "One button at a time, gentlemen. Prestane is trying to make me jump at present." He turned to Prestane. "Press harder, blood and money, or find another button. Who are you to make demands at this moment?" Prestane tightened his lips. "The law," he began. "What? Threats?" Foyle laughed. "Am I to be frightened into anything? Don't be imbecile. Speak to me the way you did New Year's Eve, Prestane. Without mercy, without forgiveness, without hypocrisy." Prestane bowed, took a breath, and ceased to smile. "I offer you power," he said. "Adoption as my heir, partnership in Prestane Enterprises, the chieftainship of clan and sept. Together we can own the world." "With pyre?" "Yes." "Your proposal is noted and declined. Will you offer your daughter?"
"Olivia?"
Prestane choked and clenched his fists.
Yes, Olivia. Where is she?
You scum! Prestaine cried. Filth! Common thief! You dare to...
Will you offer your daughter for the pyre?
Yes,
Prestaine answered, barely audible. Foyle turned to Dagenham.
Press your button, Death's Head, he said. If the discussion's to be conducted on this level,
Dagenham snapped.
It is. Without mercy, without forgiveness, without hypocrisy. What do you offer?
Glory.
Ah. We can't offer money or power. We can offer honour. Gully Foyle, the man who saved the inner planets from annihilation. We can offer security. We'll wipe out your criminal record, give you an honoured name, guarantee a niche in the Hall of Fame.
No, Gisbella McQueen cut in sharply. Don't accept. If you want to be a saviour, destroy the secret. Don't give pyre to anyone.
What is pyre? Quiet, Dagenham snapped.
It's a thermonuclear explosive that's detonated by thought alone, by psychokinesis,
Gisbella said.
What thought?
The desire of anyone to detonate it, directed at it. That brings it to critical mass if it's not insulated by inert lead isotope.
I told you to be quiet, Dagenham growled.
If we're all to have a chance at him, I want mine.
This is bigger than idealism.
Nothing's bigger than idealism.
Foyle's secret is, Yang Yeovil murmured.
I know how relatively unimportant Pyre is just now. He smiled at Foyle. Sheffield's law assistant overheard part of your little discussion in Old St. Pat's. We know about the space jaunting.
There was a sudden hush.
Space jaunting? Dagenham exclaimed. Impossible! You don't mean it.
I do mean it. Foyle demonstrated that space jaunting is not impossible. He jaunted 600,000 miles from an OS radar to the wreck of the Nomad. As I said, this is far bigger than Pyre. I should like to discuss that matter first. Everyone's been telling what they want,
Robin Withensbury said slowly.
What do you want, Gully Foyle?
Thank you, Foyle answered. I want to be punished.
What?
I want to be purged, he said in a suffocated voice.
The stigmata began to appear on his bandaged face.
I want to pay for what I've done and settle the account. I want to get rid of this damnable cross I'm carrying, this ache that's cracking my spine. I want to go back to Gouffre Martel. I want a Lobo if I deserve it, and I know I do. I want...
You want escape, Dagenham interrupted. There's no escape.
I want release.
Out of the question, Yang Yeovil said. There's too much of value locked up in your head to be lost by lobotomy.
We're beyond easy, childish things like crime and punishment, Dagenham added.
No, Robin objected. There must always be sin and forgiveness. We'll never be on that.
Profit and loss, sin and forgiveness, idealism and realism.
Foyle smiled.
You're all so sure, so simple, so single-minded. I'm the only one in doubt. Let's see how sure you really are. You'll give up Olivia Prestaine to me, yes?
Will you give her up to the law? She's a killer.
Prestaine tried to rise, and then fell back in his chair.
There must be forgiveness, Robin. Will you forgive Olivia Prestaine? She murdered your mother and sisters.
Robin turned ashen. Yang Yeovil tried to protest.
The outer satellites don't have pyre, Yeovil. Sheffield revealed that. Would you use it on them anyway? Will you turn my name into common anathema, like Lynch and Boycott?
Foyle turned to Gisbella.
Will your idealism take you back to Gouffre Martel to serve out your sentence? A new Dagenham, will you give her up? Let her go?
He listened to the outcries and watched the confusion for a moment, bitter and constrained.
Life is so simple, he said. This decision is so simple, isn't it? Am I to respect Prestaine's property rights, the welfare of the planets, Gisbella's ideals, Dagenham's realism, Robin's conscience? Press the button and watch the robot jump. But I'm not a robot. I'm a freak of the universe, a thinking animal.
and I'm trying to see my way clear through this morass. Am I to turn Pyre over to the world and let it destroy itself? Am I to teach the world how to space jaunt and let us spread our freak show from galaxy to galaxy through all the universe? What's the answer?
The bartender robot hurled its mixing glass across the room with a resounding crash. In the amazed silence that followed, Dagenham grunted,
"Damn. My radiation's disrupted your doors again, Prestane."
"The answer is yes," the robot said, quite distinctly.
"What?"
Foyle asked, taken aback. "The answer to your question is yes."
"Thank you," Foyle said.
"My pleasure, sir," the robot responded. "A man is a member of society first and an individual second. You must go along with society whether it chooses destruction or not."
"Completely haywire," Dagenham said impatiently. "Switch it off, Prestane. Wait,"
Foyle commanded. He looked at the beaming grin engraved on the steel robot face.
"But society can be so stupid, so confused. You've witnessed this conference."
"Yes, sir, but you must teach, not dictate. You must teach society."
"To space jaunt? Why? Why reach out to the stars and galaxies? What for?"
"Because you're alive, sir. You might as well ask, why is life? Don't ask about it, live it."
"Quite mad," Dagenham muttered.
"But fascinating," Yang Yeovil murmured.
"There's got to be more to life than just living," Foyle said to the robot.
"Then find it for yourself, sir. Don't ask the world to stop moving because you have doubts."
"Why can't we all move forward together?"
"Because you're all different. You're not lemmings. Some must lead, and hope that the rest will follow."
"Who leads?"
"The men who must. Driven men, compelled men."
"Freak men."
"You're all freaks, sir. But you always have been freaks. Life is a freak. That's its hope and glory."
"Thank you very much."
"My pleasure, sir."
"You've saved the day."
"Always a lovely day somewhere, sir." The robot beamed. Then it fizzed, jangled, and collapsed. Foyle turned on the others.
"That thing's right," he said, "and you're wrong. Who are we, any of us, to make a decision for the world? Let the world make its own decisions. Who are we to keep secrets from the world? Let the world know and decide for itself. Come to Waltz and Pat's."
He jaunted. They followed. The square block was still cordoned, and by now an enormous crowd had gathered. So many of the rash and curious were jaunting into the smoking ruins that the police had set up a protective induction field to keep them out. Even so, urchins, curio-seekers, and irresponsibles attempted to jaunt into the wreckage, only to be burned by the induction field and depart squawking. At a signal from Yang Yeovil, the field was turned off. Foyle went through the hot rubble to the east wall of the cathedral, which stood to a height of 15 feet. He felt the smoking stones, pressed and levered. There came a grinding grumble, and a 3-by-5-foot section jarred open, and then stuck. Foyle gripped it and pulled. The section trembled, then the roasted hinges collapsed, and the stone panel crumbled. 2 centuries before, when organized religion had been abolished, and orthodox worshippers of all faiths had been driven underground, some devout souls had constructed this secret niche in Old St. Pat's and turned it into an altar. The gold of the crucifix still shone with the brilliance of eternal faith. At the foot of the cross rested a small black box of inert lead isotope.
"Is this a sign?" Foyle panted. "Is this the answer I want?"
He snatched the heavy safe before any could seize it. He jaunted 100 yards to the remnants of the cathedral steps facing Fifth Avenue. There he opened the safe in full view of the gaping crowds. A shout of consternation went up from the intelligence crews, who knew the truth of its contents.
"Foyle!"
Dagenham cried.
"For God's sake, Foyle!"
Yang Yeovil shouted. Foyle withdrew a slug of pyre, the colour of iodine crystals, the size of a cigarette. 1 pound of transplutonian isotopes in solid solution.
"Pyre!" he roared to the mob. "Take it! Keep it! It's your future! Pyre!"
He hurled the slug into the crowd and roared over his shoulder,
San Fran, Russian Hill stage.
He jaunted St. Louis, Denver, to San Francisco, arriving at the Russian Hill stage, where it was 4 in the afternoon, and the streets were bustling with late shopper jaunters.
Pyre!
Foyle bellowed. His devil face glowed blood red. He was an appalling sight.
Pyre, it's yours! Make them tell you what it is! Gnome!
He called to his pursuit as it arrived, and jaunted. It was lunch hour in Nome, and the lumberjacks, jaunting down from the sawmills for their beefsteak and beer, were startled by the tiger-faced man, who hurled a 1-pound slug of iodine-coloured alloy into their midst, and shouted in the gutter tongue,
"Pyre! You hear me, man! You listen to me, you! Grab no guesses, you! Make 'em tell you about Pyre, is all!"
To Dagenham, Yang Yeovil, and the others jaunting in after him, as always seconds too late, he shouted,
"Tokyo! Imperial stage!"
He disappeared a split second before their shots reached him. It was 9 o'clock of a crisp, wintry morning in Tokyo, and the morning rush-hour crowd milling around the Imperial stage alongside the carp ponds was paralysed by a tiger-faced samurai who appeared to hurl a slug of curious metal and unforgettable admonitions at them. Foyle continued to Bangkok, where it was pouring rain, and Delhi, where a monsoon raged, always pursued in his mad-dog course. In Baghdad, it was 3 in the morning, and the nightclub crowd and pub-crawlers, who stayed a perpetual half-hour ahead of closing time around the world, cheered him alcoholically. In Paris, and again in London, it was midnight, and the mobs on the Champs-Élysées and in Piccadilly Circus were galvanized by Foyle's appearance and passionate exhortation. Having led his pursuers 3/4 of the way around the world in 50 minutes, Foyle permitted them to overtake him in London. He permitted them to knock him down, take the ILI safe from his arms, count the remaining slugs of Pyre, and slam the safe shut.
"There's enough left for a war. Plenty left for destruction, annihilation, if you dare."
He was laughing and sobbing in hysterical triumph.
"Millions for defense, but not 1 cent for survival." "Do you realize what you've done, you damn killer?"
Dagenham shouted.
"I know what I've done." 9 pounds of Pyre scattered around the world. One thought and we'll... How can we get it back without telling them the truth? For God's sake, yo, keep that crowd back. Don't let them hear this."
"Impossible."
"Then let's jaunt."
"No,"
Foyle roared.
"Let them hear this. Let them hear everything." "You're insane, man. You've handed a loaded gun to children. Stop treating them like children and they'll stop behaving like children. Who the hell are you to play monitor?" "What are you talking about?" "Stop treating them like children. Explain the loaded gun to them. Bring it all out into the open."
Foyle laughed savagely.
"I've ended the last Star Chamber conference in the world. I've blown the last secret wide open. No more secrets from now on. No more telling the children what's best for them to know. Let them all grow up. It's about time." "Christ, he is insane." "Am I? I've handed life and death back to the people who do the living and dying. The common man's been whipped and led along enough by driven men like us. Compulsive men. Tiger men who can't help lashing the world before them. We're all tigers, the three of us. But who the hell are we to make decisions for the world just because we're compulsive? Let the world make its own choice between life and death. Why should we be saddled with the responsibility?"
"We're not saddled," Yang Yeovil said quietly. "We're driven. We're forced to seize the responsibility that the average man shirks."
"Then let him stop shirking it. Let him stop tossing his duty and guilt onto the shoulders of the first freak who comes along grabbing at it. Are we to be scapegoats for the world forever?" "Damn you,"
Dagenham raged.
"Don't you realize that you can't trust people? They don't know enough for their own good. Then let them learn or die. We're all in this together. Let's live together or die together." "Do you want to die in their ignorance? You've got to figure out how we can get those slugs back without blowing everything wide open."
"No, I believe in them. I was one of them before I turned tiger. They can all turn uncommon if they're kicked awake like I was."
Foyle shook himself and abruptly jaunted to the bronze head of Eros, 50 feet above the center of Piccadilly Circus. He perched precariously and bawled,
Listen to me, all you. Listen, man. Gonna sermonize me. Dig this, you.
He was answered with a roar.
You pigs, you. You rot like pigs, is all. You got the most in you, and you use the least. You hear me, you? Got a million in you and spend pennies. Got a genius in you and think crazies. Got a heart in you and feel empties. All of you. Every you.
He was jeered. He continued with the hysterical passion of the possessed.
Take a war to make you spend. Take a jam to make you think. Take a challenge to make you great. Rest of the time you sit around lazy, you. Pigs, you. All right, goddamn you. I challenge you, me. Die or live and be great. Blow yourselves to Christ gone, or come and find me, Golly Foyle, and I make you men. I make you great. I give you the stars.
He disappeared. He jaunted up the geodesic lines of space-time to an elsewhere and an elsewhen. He arrived in chaos. He hung in a precarious para now for a moment, and then tumbled back into chaos.
It can be done, he thought. It must be done.
He jaunted again, a burning spear flung from unknown into unknown, and again he tumbled back into the chaos of para-space and para-time. He was lost in nowhere.
I believe, he thought. I have faith.
He jaunted again, and failed again.
Faith in what?
He asked himself, adrift in limbo.
Faith in faith,
he answered himself.
It isn't necessary to have something to believe in. It's only necessary to believe that somewhere there's something worthy of belief.
He jaunted for the last time, and the power of his willingness to believe transformed the para now of his random destination into a real now. Rigel in Orion, burning blue-white, 540 light-years from Earth, 10,000 times more luminous than the sun, a cauldron of energy circled by 37 massive planets. Foyle hung, freezing and suffocating in space, face to face with the incredible destiny in which he believed, but which was still inconceivable. He hung in space for a blinding moment, as helpless, as amazed, and yet as inevitable as the first guild creature to come out of the sea and hang gulping on a primeval beach in the dawn history of life on Earth. He space jaunted, turning para now into now. Vega in Lyra, an AO star 26 light-years from Earth, burning bluer than Rigel, planetless, but encircled by swarms of blazing comets, whose gaseous tails scintillated across the blue-black firmament. And again he turned now into now. Canopus, yellow as the sun, gigantic, thunderous in the silent wastes of space, at last invaded by a creature that once was Guild. The creature hung, gulping on the beach of the universe, nearer death than life, nearer the future than the past, 10 leagues beyond the wide world's end. It wondered at the masses of dust, meteors and motes that girdle Canopus in a broad flat ring like the rings of Saturn, and of the breadth of Saturn's orbit. Now, Aldebaran in Taurus, a monstrous red star of a pair of stars, whose 16 planets wove high-velocity ellipses around their gyrating parents. He was hurling himself through space-time with growing assurance. Now, Antares, an M1 red giant, paired like Aldebaran, 250 light-years from Earth, encircled by 250 planetoids of the size of Mercury, of the climate of Eden. And lastly, now. He was back aboard Nomad.
Golly Foyle is my name, and Terra is my nation. Deep space is my dwelling place, the stars my destination.
The girl Moira found him in his tool locker aboard Nomad, curled in a tight fetal ball, his face hollow, his eyes burning with divine revelation. Although the asteroid had long since been repaired and made airtight, Foyle still went through the motions of the perilous existence that had given birth to him years before. But now he slept and meditated, digesting and encompassing the magnificence he had learned. He awoke from reverie to trance, and drifted out of the locker, passing Moira with blind eyes, brushing past the awed girl, who stepped aside and sank to her knees. He wandered through the empty passages and returned to the womb of the locker. He curled up again and was lost. She touched him once. He made no move. She spoke the name that had been emblazoned on his face. He made no answer. She turned and fled to the interior of the asteroid, to the Holy of Holies in which Yosef reigned.
"My husband has returned to us," Moira said.
"Your husband?"
"The God-man who almost destroyed us."
Yosef's face darkened with anger.
"Where is he? Show me."
"You will not hurt him."
"All debts must be paid. Show me."
Yosef followed her to the locker aboard Nomad and gazed intently at Foyle. The anger in his face was replaced by wonder. He touched Foyle and spoke to him. There was still no response.
"You cannot punish him," Moira said. "He is dying."
"No,"
Yosef answered quietly.
"He is dreaming. I, a priest, know these dreams. Presently he will awaken and read to us, his people, his thoughts."
"And then you will punish him."
"He has found it already in himself,"
Yosef said. He settled down outside the locker. The girl Moira ran up the twisted corridors and returned a few moments later with a silver basin of warm water and a silver tray of food. She bathed Foyle gently and then set the tray before him as an offering. Then she settled down alongside Yosef, alongside the world, prepared to await the awakening. This concludes The Stars My Destination by Alfred Bester, narrated by Gerard Doyle, a member of SAG-AFTRA. Copyright 1956 by Alfred Bester. Copyright renewed 1984 by Alfred Bester. Special restored text of this edition, copyright 1996 by the estate of Alfred Bester. Introduction, copyright 1996 by Neil Gaiman. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with J. Boylston and Company Publishers and was produced in the year 2017 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.